Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
SoCal's Country Station, 95.1 K-Frog. I'm Pepper. This is Spirit of the IE. On any given day, there are almost 400,000 children in the U.S. foster care system, and over 100,000 of those children are waiting to be adopted into a loving family. On average, these children wait almost 3 years to be adopted. Siblings Addie, Ruby, Alicia, Anthony, Abriella, Leo, and Xander found themselves in that situation when their parents were tragically killed in a car accident. The children miraculously survived the accident, but also had an additional challenge now, keeping their family together. Meanwhile, Pam Willis and her husband Gary were preparing to be empty nesters when they saw the story of the 7 siblings on the news, and realizing that they had the space in their house for all of them, pivoted and started making plans to adopt the Second Chance 7. Here to tell us their incredible story is Pam and the oldest of the Second Chance 7, Addie and Ruby. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us this story from your perspective.
I'm sure my perspective is different, obviously, because my husband and I were foster parents and we had done that for about 5 years. So we were somewhat familiar with the system, but we had usually taken younger children below school age. And we just did that as a means of helping. I was a nurse previously, and so as my career as a nurse, I would see babies going to foster care sometimes, and I would say, oh, I want to do that. And as my children at home got older, my husband and I had 5 children, and as those children got older, we started to learn about foster care and become certified to take children. So we did that for 5 years. And then we were becoming empty nesters and kind of trying to decide, should we move? Should we, this big old house is going to be empty. You know, should we move closer to our grown children now and maybe near the grandkids? And that's when we saw their story, which began about a year before I ever saw it.
I would say from my perspective, foster care, our biological mother was a foster kid herself, and all the stories that she told me were of bad things. So there were many stereotypes around the foster care system that many kids get physically abused or used for money. So going into it, I wasn't very hopeful. There was so much going on at the time that I was basically out of it. It's like my fate was sealed. I wasn't putting up much of a fight. I knew that there's little chance that our family could stay together. It's already a struggle for people to take on 1, maybe 2 kids in the foster care system, but to take on 7 at once, practically impossible. I've heard many, many stories and where siblings, 3 or 4 of them, would even get split up in between homes, sometimes close, sometimes far away. And so I thought me and the rest of my siblings would be placed everywhere else, just far from each other, because there was just that many.
How old were you at the time?
At the time, I was 12, about to turn 13. It happened, I think, a few months before I turned 13, or a month or so.
May 11th. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so about a month in. And at that time, I had already become basically the rest of my siblings' father. I had taken over most of the duties, taking care of them, cooking, cleaning, making sure they were in bed, getting them up for school, changing diapers, sometimes, you know, going shopping for them. So it was really weird afterwards because I woke up, I was in the hospital. I remember like a couple days, and then we were in this big facility, and only a couple of my siblings were with me because some of them were still in the hospital, like Ruby, due to her injuries. Others were younger, so I think they were placed like under more care. And there were a bunch of other kids with us, like a bunch of houses basically on one area. And I thought that basically meant like it was over, because there were a couple times where we were told people were coming to like visit us, to meet us, maybe take us with them to their house, but they never showed. So that was already a bad sign in my eyes.
They were at Polinsky Center in San Diego for a few weeks while they were kind of waiting for all of them to get out of their respective hospitals and find a home that they were trying to place them all in.
What was foster care like, Ruby?
Well, same with Addie. Like, I knew foster care wasn't like a good place. I also was already like in a bad place because I really didn't like hospitals either. So like having to be in a hospital before was really hard for me. But at the beginning, I remember like trying to like be this like outstanding like child that people would want until my first foster home. And I just like, I gave up. And even though I wanted a family, I was very emotionally attached to my biological mother. And so the thought of having to call another woman my mom was something I didn't want to do. And it took a very long time for me to be able to call my mom now my mom. But foster care was really difficult and was definitely what our biological mother had told us about. We didn't get it to the extent that she got it, but we definitely did get the bad side of foster care, which is majority of what the foster kids get.
It was so interesting when they came to our home. In California, you need to foster for 6 months before you are able to adopt. So as they moved into our home in 2019, they officially were foster children, even though we knew that they were ours forever. We just had felt that from the moment we met them. But I still had to do all of the paperwork for each of them. And so I had to dole out different allowances for each child and, you know, buy certain clothing for each one every month and show the receipts and do all of that. And they were like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I just have to do the foster paperwork." And they were looking at it like they'd never seen it before. And I said, "Well, you know, I have to do your allowance and receipts for your clothes." And they just kind of looked at me and said, "Are all foster parents supposed to do that?" Like, they had no idea that they were supposed to get clothing. And they, you know, didn't really get much allowance to speak of. I think you said like a dollar or two here or there.
Yeah. And by the time that we were leaving to go to your house, like to go start living with you guys, our foster parent had actually taken the rest of the allowance that she had actually given us and kept it for herself.
There was allowance?
There was allowance, but she just locked it up all the time.
I didn't even know that. Yeah, from what I remember from that family, it's not much, honestly. I don't remember getting allowance, but I remember getting an iPad once. Not an iPad, it was a tablet. I think, I don't remember.
You had like
brand.
A Kindle tablet.
Yeah.
I remember like, it, yeah.
A Kindle. And then there was an Xbox 360 at one point. I was technically supposed to share, but it seemed she allowed me to play it pretty much exclusively. I had so little hope for life at that time that I didn't notice a lot of the stuff that was going on at that foster house, which I do apologize for. It's just, we've been homeless multiple times throughout our lives and stuff like that. I had hardly wore clothes up until I was like 11, by choice, but so I knew that we had food, a place to stay, and clothing. That was all that really like mattered to me at that point. I didn't even know that clothes, you know, that you could grow out of them so fast.
And to be fair, you did get the best treatment from our foster parent. She, like you said, you were the only one allowed to play the Xbox. You got to eat food in the living room. You got to have the portion that you wanted. Like, there were a lot of things that she did for you that she didn't do for the rest of us, and I think it was because you were the oldest.
That makes sense.
And because you were, like, the oldest boy.
I didn't know she did.
She didn't have a son.
Portion control. I mean, like, I hardly ate because, I don't know, I've hated food for a long time, mainly because my biological mother said some not nice things about my weight, even though I was basically skin and bones. So I don't even remember how much I used to eat there. But I remember the food not always being good. Like, there were times where they would cook spaghetti, the sauce would be cold, and it was just terrible. So I didn't like eating there too much. But she really controlled you guys' fortunes?
I got the same amount that Xander did, and he was, what, four?
She even told me not to feed them too much.
Yeah.
When she was, like, trying to instruct me.
She did portion control on Aubrey, too, saying that Aubrey was chubby and, yeah.
Pam, had you and your husband ever discussed adoption prior to adopting seven kids?
We hadn't ever really thought about adoption. We had raised our five children, and we were beginning to have grandchildren, and we loved fostering, but for the most part, in fostering, the goal of fostering is to be able to reunite the family. And so it wasn't as if every child that came into our home, we were like, oh, maybe we'll adopt this child. There are definitely a set of children in the foster system that the parental rights have been released. And so they are ones that are waiting to be adopted. But many of the children, especially the younger ones, that the age group that we were taking, they were still at the point of trying to reunify with family members, if not their parents, another family member. That was always the goal. So it wasn't necessarily a consideration that we had to make at the time. I think if anyone would have said, hey, these children that you have right now don't have anywhere to go, we probably absolutely would have said yes. You know, we'll take them because we fell in love with every child that came through our doors. But I don't think that opportunity was never presented to us because there was always a plan. Many of them went back to their parents or to another family member. So when I saw the story of the seven, it was really difficult for me to believe, like, wow, they have nobody. Because I know how hard they work. The social workers, they'll look up relatives in different states and try to place them with someone within their own family. And I think that just deepened my feeling of, I need to take care of these kids. Like, I looked at their eyes in those pictures that were posted and the videos that were made on the news story, and I just felt like I needed to take care of them. And Ruby, I think I noticed first on the news interview, she had a really big personality, and she was also very much a parent. When she was giving her interview for the adoption piece that was on the news, she was talking about the children, and she was very, you know, speaking in a very mature manner, and she was 10 or 11, maybe just had turned 11. And I thought, well, that one, she is going through a lot. I could just see it from understanding children that have gone through trauma and the children that had come through my home, even though I hadn't taken care of children that old in the foster system. So I knew that Ruby and I were going to have our challenges because as she came, come to find out, her grief was just so unprocessed at that point. You know, I think every single one of them was in survival mode. They were just, for this whole year, not even able to let their guard down enough to process the grief of losing their parents and the grief of everything that they had gone through and being in a foreign place, you know, in this home that they weren't used to and rules that they weren't used to in a new school and social workers coming all the time. They didn't really have time, I think, to grieve any of that. So I knew when they came to us that that would be the beginning for them, was being allowed to feel those feelings and grieve and go through their trauma. So we knew we had a long road ahead of us as far as allowing them to, you know, deal with all of it, but we took on the challenge.
As the two oldest of your seven siblings, what were you told about your chances for adoption?
We were told that there was a big chance that our siblings were going to get adopted pretty quickly, and we were most likely going to be cycling through foster care up until we were 18. That it wasn't likely that we would get adopted, or at least not for a while, because they said older kids aren't usually the ones that are chosen. It's usually the younger ones.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of stereotypes surrounding teenagers in the foster care system. Obviously, you know, some of those are partially true. Like, I can testify that I was very difficult when I first moved in with our parents, our current parents. And I was for a few years after that, and even now I still kind of am. There's a big difference between adopting little kids and adopting teenagers.
I disagree. He wasn't difficult at all.
No,
he was not. Actually one of the easiest ones.
I take that title.
He felt probably like he was in turmoil, because he was, you know, internally. But you weren't really difficult at first at all. I think it took you a while to process your grief and trauma, but you definitely, the first year or two, I would not have said, oh yeah, Addie's the most difficult. Not at all. You were pretty chill because you were still in survival mode, I think, you know? And I knew it was coming. I knew there was going to be a point where you had to process it all. And I was kind of waiting for it. I think all seven of you sort of processed at different times in different ways, which actually allowed me and Dad to be able to handle it, you know, because if you all were going through all the hardest parts at the same time, it probably would have been a lot more difficult. But I think you were really easy to handle. I think that Ruby was a lot more verbal, obviously. She's a more verbal person anyway, and she had a lot of big feelings that had been really held inside. But the stigma that you were talking about, or the, you know, the stereotypes that are out there, I think are because the children often don't have a lot of guidance.
I was going to say, like, younger kids usually don't have that much of an understanding of what the world is truly like.
Right.
So it's easier to work with because they're still learning.
Right.
But when you're adopting, like, older kids, like me and Ruby, like you guys did, we have a decent grasp on the world. Like, we have understanding of complex social structures and stuff like that. And usually teenagers in the foster care system, they've only seen the dark side of the world, and so that's all they know. And so it's really hard to work with us sometimes, like, because it's just really hard for us to trust anybody. Like, my mother may have said that I was easy the first couple of years, but that's simply because I didn't trust them. I thought everybody in the world was my enemy, including mm-hmm. my siblings, and that was unfair to them because they were younger. But there's things that happened that made me come to loathe them at times. And, you know, as time went on, there were just so many problems that I had, and I tried to do it all on my own, and it just, my parents were trying to, you know, help me with it, and I saw it as an attack on me, like they didn't have faith in my character and things like that. So it's just teenagers and preteens, stuff like that, they're a lot more emotionally complex because they've already, like, grown some. And I'm not trying to say this to make it sound like, oh, you should feel obligated to adopt teenagers even though they're older. It takes a lot of mental strain. I know for sure I did my fair share of giving my mom stress during high school, especially.
Luckily, I had already been through 5 teenagers before you, so it was just another bump in the road.
It's true. Also with, like, younger kids and teenagers in the foster system, kids are a lot more trusting than teenagers, and mm-hmm. teenagers are a lot more rebellious than kids, and some parents just don't want to have to deal with the rebellion of the teenagers that they're fostering or wanting to adopt. They don't want to have to deal with the struggle of teaching that those preteens or teens that the world isn't all just darkness.
Yeah.
I think the benefit that Dad and I had, having been parents previously and having raised teenagers previously, is that it was easy for us to see teenage behavior that every teenager goes through, normal stuff. We weren't looking at you like, oh my gosh, this is crazy, because we know what teenagers are like. I mean, and obviously I still remember what it was like to be a teenager myself. So it was easier for us, I think, to separate it out and to look at normal teenage stuff and then pain and grief and processing. They were sort of two different things that were going on at the same time, but it was easy for me to separate them. and not look at you and say, oh, this is, you know, a difficult child or a bad kid or anything like that. It was just a lot of normal stuff plus the extra pain and things that had to be processed on the side.
Yeah, that's true. And I was able to see some of it too once I started taking that psychology course in high school.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually nuts how much surface level stuff I was going, like I was experiencing at that time. Like it was really easy to understand once I had that information. Obviously, I still put you through the ringer. but
do you remember how much we connected over that psychology class, though? We used to talk about it a lot. That was probably one of the first things that we really connected over.
For sure. That's when I first started, like, growing close to you, I think. Because, like, for me, ever since I was younger, you know, I didn't have a lot of opportunities to have friends. I had two really good friends when I was younger, but that was it. And because we were moving so much, like, I really never kept in contact with anybody else. So I talked to mostly adults growing up, and I always enjoyed, you know, like calm, deep conversations and being able to have those with you about a subject that I was just beginning to unearth was amazing. Like, there's all this new information, and while I was getting this, I was able to learn more about you as a person, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what helped me build so much trust, you know. It only took about, what, 2 years? But
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Speaking with Pam Willis, adoptive mother of the Second Chance Seven and the two oldest of the Second Chance Seven, Addie and Ruby. Addie, what was the moment for you when you realized that you were really starting to trust this new adoptive family?
That's a tough one, because there were signs early on that I could trust them. I think what made me truly realize that I could trust my parents was late into high school. So I'm going to actually call myself out here. But in the last couple years of my time in high school, I had kind of like given up on schooling. Because at this point of my life, like, I didn't think I was going to make it to 18. There's this, like, doomsday cloud over my head. And every day went by and I was just thinking, there's no way I'm going to make it to 18. Something's going to take me out. Because I spent my entire life like on the verge of, you know, starvation and just constantly being physically and mentally abused. I just thought there was no way. So I'd given up in school. And because of my independence from before, I had really pushed away both Pam and Gary when they were trying to help me through this, because they saw that my grades were tanking and they're like, well, we can help you. And they were trying to help me with my homework or some of my assignments, help create better habits. But I just refused any help whatsoever and I would not budge. And it was a couple months of constant fighting, and yet every single time they kept revisiting it. And even though I found it very, very frustrating at the time, I now realize it was actually helpful. And there came a time, I think it was a couple months into my junior year of high school, that my mom was like, backed off. And she was like, okay, I'll trust you. And that was honestly the first time I've ever heard those words. Because my biological parents, they were out of it most of the time. So I had to do everything without much support from them. And even when they were there, I was always belittled for something. Like, I didn't clean this right. I didn't do the dishes correctly. I forgot to feed the kids. Xander's diaper was still full. It was just always something. It was the first time in my life that a parental figure had said, okay, I trust you. And that had started to open my eyes, like, a ton. And then I started realizing all the things that they were doing for every single one of us. I mean, Ruby was starting to do better in school to the point she was making fun of me every day. The kids were super healthy and they started getting really active in sports, which, like, before, they always seemed so sluggish. And I still fought them all the way up until my graduation. But that was the point when I realized, like, they truly wanted to be our parents. And it was crazy. It took a lot of patience, especially on my mom's part, because me and her had started growing closer around my sophomore year of high school, and this had become like a stopgap, but she didn't want it to continue to ruin our relationship, so she just kept trying every single day, and that is eventually like what helped me too.
You mentioned that early in your time in the foster care system that there was some resentment between you and your younger siblings. Looking back, do you think that was maybe a defense mechanism born out of fear of being separated from them?
That's a tough question. My memory is very spotty, and just my brain has blotted out a lot of the trauma. I would have to say yes, because I have a lot of regrets about how I treated them in the past. I know I hear it every time I bring up this subject, that I was only a kid, that I didn't know what I was doing, that I was going through a lot. But I myself was abusive towards my younger siblings. It was a struggle taking care of almost six kids, because Ruby did help a lot with the kids as well. And they were also going through things. There was just a lot going on, and I let it get to the better of me. And I think as a way to avoid taking responsibility for how I lashed out at them, I had gone and started to hate them and think that they were purposely being difficult to try and make my life harder. And I continued to hold on to that resentment for a really, really long time. And I truly think it's because of those regrets, especially towards Ruby, because she was closest to my age. And I had treated her possibly the harshest out of all of them. I can't exactly say why. I think it's because I know that she was experiencing everything alongside me, and I was maybe hoping that she could handle a little bit more.
I think when you say that you were abusive towards them, that wasn't something that I ever saw, right? So that was prior to you moving into our home. And when I would hear that, I would think that's what was modeled for you, though, and that's how cycles continue. Right? And you never had the propensity to do any of that in our home. But yeah. I was also taking care of the children. It wasn't your responsibility as a 13-year-old, 12-year-old, 11-year-old to take care of those children. I'm sure that could breed resentment right there, you know, being that age and all your friends are out playing and you're changing diapers and cooking dinner. So I know you're hard on yourself, but I see it from a bigger picture, and we know that's how cycles like that, abuse cycles and addiction cycles and all of the cycles that bring people down out there, that's how they're born, right? Just through modeling.
Yeah. And like you said, I am hard on myself, but I feel like sometimes I have to be, because I just don't want to turn out like our biological parents. I know they went through a lot themselves. Their childhoods were not easy at all either. But I just don't want to allow myself to have an excuse for how I used to act, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Pam, what was the reaction like from your family and friends when you announced you're adopting 7 kids?
I think that at first, of course, they were kind of like, you're crazy. You know, they knew that we had been foster parents and they had seen us with 2, sometimes 3 at a time. That was the most that we had at a time, was 3. And they were always super accepting and loving of any of the children that were with us at any time. But I think that was very different than saying we are adopting 7 of them. They're going to be here forever. And I think, you know, my older kids, I talked with each of them to see, you know, their thoughts, their feelings, their fears. And most of them understood where my heart was because they had been in the home when we were fostering, and they had sort of those same maternal or paternal feelings toward the children that we had taken care of. So they didn't really question it very much. My older 2 that had already been out of the house for a long time and been married, and they were just a little like, are you sure? Like, you're kind of old. to them, you know, we were like starting all over again, which we were, you know, the youngest was only 2. So we were kind of starting all over again, but I think it just seemed foreign to them. And my oldest son, his biggest fear was, you know, don't like spend all of your retirement on this. And are you going to be okay financially and things like that? And when I said, yes, you know, we're going to be fine. And he said, okay, then I'm all in. And I think that's really what mattered, is that they were also on board, and they've been just amazing older brothers and older sisters to these guys, and they love them. And, you know, Ruby's had makeup lessons, and Addie gets to sit and joke around with the older boys, and they tease each other about the gym and their muscles and, you know, things like that. And I just have watched them really be accepted and flourish in the family, and it's been really a beautiful experience.
Yeah, that was surprising. Like, they were very open arms from like pretty much the moment we walked in through the door. I don't know what I was expecting when we met them, but that much kindness I wasn't. That threw me for a loop.
What are the holidays like at your house?
So right now, with children, grandchildren, and the spouses of my older kids that are married, there are 25 of us when we get together, just our kids and grandkids and their spouses. And we have a big home. We're still in the same home. We've been remodeling for a few years and kind of opening up space more to hold, you know, these big gatherings. Some of my kids live out of state, so they come home for the holidays and they bring the grandkids. And the fun part is we have 8 grandchildren, and the grandkids are the same ages as some of the younger kids, and they just are like cousins, really. They play together so great. They have so much fun, you know, getting together. My one son lives down the street, and he has 3 children, and they come over all the time, and they are just best friends with the younger of the kids. So it's just been really this wonderful, seamless melding of them into the family. They fit so perfectly, and everyone just adores them, just like I do as their mom. So family get-togethers are loud and chaotic, but they're happy. Everyone's just happy, and everyone's just enjoying being together. And we put in a pool for these guys. Of course, my older kids were like, wow, we never got a pool. But we put in a pool for them. And so we have a lot of gatherings around the pool, which is really nice to just hang out together. And it's just fun. Everyone loves being together and enjoying each other's company.
You burn out so fast. So if, like, me and Ruby, we
they get overstimulated.
People, we're not people, our people persons. But because with all of our other family and friends coming over, it gets up to sometimes, like, what, 50 people?
Yeah. Aunts and uncles and grandparents. It does get a little much, but I got to hand it to you guys. You do your diligence and... You hang out for as long as you can. Then they got to go recharge their social batteries for a little while.
It's two people in here.
Right. But, you know, not for any other reason than just overstimulation, which I can totally understand, you know. But they love being with them. And, of course, one-on-one or two or three at a time isn't so bad that, you know, 25 or 30.
Yeah.
What is your relationship with your younger siblings like now?
Really good. They come to me all the time about the things they do throughout their day. So, like, they'll tell me how their sports are going. Anthony, Leo, and Aubriella actually started drawing because of me, which I'm really happy about. I put it down a long time ago. I need to pick the pencil back up. But I love seeing that because, like, they found a hobby they really enjoy simply because they wanted to be closer to me. So they show me their drawings all the time, and they're starting to get really good to the point it's worrying me because they're going to be better than me soon. With Ruby, I would say it's really good. It took a lot longer for us to get along. Our mom can testify to that. But I had to let go of my resentment first for her. But once that happened, we started flourishing. We joke around with each other all the time. She always drags me out of my room to take her friends home because she never can communicate times properly.
Well, don't act like you don't like hanging out with us, okay?
I don't at all until I get
you
food.
You do. You love it.
But yeah, I would say my relationship is really good with all of them.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm speaking with Pam Willis, adoptive mother of the Second Chance Seven, and Addie and Ruby, the oldest two siblings of the Second Chance Seven. What do you want people to know about the foster care system?
Yes, teenagers are difficult, but like how Addie was saying, the place that we went to after the hospital, which was like a group home, and it was a bunch of different houses with like a bunch of different kids, like all ages. And there was one house specifically for like teenagers, 14 through like 17, I think. And like they were all great kids, but they had a lot of trauma. Like, and so if people can just look past all the difficult stuff that the kids have been through, they're really great people. Like, they're great kids. They just have been through a lot.
I would like to say that it's okay to be scared. I mean, it's hard taking care of other people. Like, me and Ruby both understand that some, especially people with a lot of emotional trauma behind them. So don't feel like you have to be overly prepared and, like, fully set in stone that you can do this. Like, I'm sure Mom, Dad, like, Pam and Gary, they were so worried because they knew so much. They were really prepared for us somehow. And yet, I saw times where they looked a little worried about how things were going. There are a lot of resources out there, and my mother is a good one herself. It's okay to be worried about fostering. It's hard, but yeah. It's not impossible.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, sometimes I would say, you know, I don't know about this, or I'm not sure about this or that, and I would say, well, we're just going to figure it out together. I've never adopted 7 kids before, so, you know, I'm new at this, I would say. And I think that's the attitude that you go into it with older kids. We're going to figure this out together. And I love you, and I want the best for you, and I want safety and security for you. And that's really the foundation of what they all need. That's what we all need as humans. And once they get that foundation of trust and love and safety and security, they can begin to develop their own personalities and explore their world that, you know, maybe they haven't had an opportunity to do previously. There weren't maybe the opportunities there. So it has been an immense blessing to watch every single one of these children just find their voice, find their personality, be secure and trying new things and feel supported with the family there cheering at the games or whatever. I think about 2 years into it, the kids started in soccer, and Leo was, I think, 6 at the time of his first game, and he ran onto the field. He was so excited, and he did something like made a good kick or something, and we all said, "Yay, Leo!" And he turned and looked at us with the biggest smile, like it was the best day of his life. I will never forget his face. He was just beaming with all of this love and support, and he was like living his best life at that moment. And it's times like that and times where the kids just come to you out of nowhere and they say, "Mommy, I love you," or "Mommy, I'm scared," or "Mommy, can you help me?" And those moments were so beautiful to me because I knew that it was a sign of growth and trust and love for them to be comfortable to come to us and to say, "I need help with something," and know that we were going to be there. So it's been an amazing blessing. I think you go into it open-minded. Everyone is learning along the way, and you just learn together. We're still learning.
What do you want people to know about how the foster care system works?
One of the interesting things to me was 5 years of foster parenting, and I never knew that this whole segment of children who have no parental connections and need homes, I never knew that existed. I was a foster parent. I was licensed, and I would take children, you know, for a year as their case went through the court system, and then they would, you know, go to a family member or go back to a parent. And I never knew that there was a whole segment of kids that aren't in that situation where they're waiting, trying to reunite, where they're still doing all this visitation and everything. I think it's sort of this hidden world that a lot of people don't know about. And if I, as a foster parent who was really involved with my foster agency and, you know, tried to do extra things to volunteer and stuff like that, I really didn't have any idea that that whole segment of children was out there. I think that's something that's so important for people to understand. There's a foster system, and there's a need for it, certainly, to care for children as their parents are going through whatever they need to go through to heal and to hopefully be able to reunify with them. But there's also that segment of kids that just needs a home and needs a forever family. So I think that's the most important thing to understand, that if you have room in your heart or you have room in your home, that's something to explore, because adoption from foster care does not cost thousands and thousands of dollars that people say, you know, this is very expensive to adopt like from another country or do a private adoption. It's very expensive. And so a lot of people think, oh, I wish I could adopt, but I can't afford it. And I have a social media page where people ask me questions about this all the time. You know, how did you afford to adopt 7 children? Isn't one child just thousands and thousands of dollars to adopt? And I try to explain over and over again that there's federal subsidies for all of that. It covers all the expenses of adoption. And so it isn't something that's very expensive. And these children are just waiting for love. And I think so many people don't know that that exists.
What else should people know about the children who are in the system?
I think they should know that they're really just kids. I do remember some of the people at Polinsky. Whenever I would talk to them, it felt like I was just at school. Yeah, there's a lot of emotional baggage that every kid in foster care carries, but at heart, they're still just, you know, children. It's not like you're going into this with, I don't know how to put this into words exactly, because I feel like foster kids are viewed differently sometimes mm-hmm. than normal kids, but they're really not. It surprised me how normal it felt being at Polinsky around those other guys.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's really not an obstacle. Like, these kids aren't challenges that they have to get past. You don't have to, like, it's not a challenge trying to be like, okay, I need to like work through this, this, and this in order to be able to really like connect with this kid. Like, if you can just treat them like they're a normal child and like there's nothing wrong with them, they're gonna start trusting you from the beginning. Like, if you treat them no different from everybody else, like, that's the best thing you can do for them.
Yeah, and it breaks my heart to hear things like what Ruby expressed. You know, I tried to be really good. And what she is saying is, I tried to be adoptable. I tried to be someone that someone would want, as if you're shopping and looking for the best product. And that just literally breaks my heart in pieces, to think that a child has to declare their worth or demonstrate their worth in order to be chosen. And if I could take every single one of these kids out there, I would. You know, my heart is just breaks for kids who have to go through feeling unloved or unwanted or not understanding, you know, why they are in the situation that they're in. And I think there are a lot of people who have a lot of love in their heart and just don't know that this option exists and that there are plenty of wonderful children out there. You can give birth to a child and still go through huge struggles with that child as they grow up. You know, there's no guarantee in life, whether you are an adoptive parent, whether you're a birth parent, whatever the case, there are of course going to be children that have issues that, you know, are really difficult to deal with. But you can't say that just because they come from the foster system that they're going to be difficult and have a struggle. And it just isn't that way.
Walk us through the adoption process. What does that look like?
When you're adopting from foster care, there is, as I was saying, in California, there's a 6-month period where you're actually fostering the children. And the case is treated still like a foster case, in that you don't get every detail yet. You don't get all of the ins and outs, but you definitely get to know the kids and have them in your home and, you know, live a life as you will be living going forward. But at the point where it's time for the adoption to happen, there is a day where you will sit down with their file with the social worker, and they will go through every piece of history that they have been able to gather for you. They'll give you as much information as they can about anything medical and any, you know, social histories, things like that, maybe family ties, just whatever they can gather. So you get all of that information, which for us was a really long day because there were 7 files and they're required to go through, you know, each one. So that's a piece of it. And then after that, you sign the papers and that kind of goes through the court system. And then you have a day in court where the judge, you know, formally says that you're adoption is final. Now, for us, that happened during the pandemic. So, of course, we couldn't do anything the easy way. Our court date was the week that pretty much the whole town of San Diego shut down
that was our court date, was that week. And so the courts shut down, everything shut down. It was like shelter in place, you know, the pandemic. And that was March of 2020, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to wait for our court date until August. And of course, the kids were homeschooling because all the schools were closed and everything. San Diego, Riverside, everything was all closed. And so there was no place to do the adoption hearing. And they were offering us to do it via like a Zoom meeting. And we were like, no, we want our day in court. We'll wait. It's fine. We didn't need like the official piece of paper to say that something, you know, was going to happen. We were already living that way. But finally in August, we were like, okay, fine, we'll do the Zoom, because it was taking forever. And, you know, we all thought the pandemic was going to be a few weeks. And obviously, you know, it dragged on. So I think the portion of it where you're just signing the papers and having your court day for adoption, that piece of it is easy. I think it's going through the foster part of it. There's a lot of paperwork that you have to do when you're a foster parent. You have to account for the funds that are being spent on the children. And so I had 7 files, you know, that every month I had to turn in receipts of clothing and all of that. So for me, it was a lot of paperwork just because there were so many of them. And doing all the social work visits, you still have to have your visits and the kids visit with everybody. And you're accountable, obviously, for the children that are in your care. Once your adoption goes through, they are yours. And you have a social worker that is there to sort of give you that transitional time. But it's not as much paperwork and visits from workers and all of that. It kind of trails off. And then you can just, you know, live your normal life. So probably the most complicated piece of it is the 6 months that they need to be considered foster in your home.
Why do you think there are so many children waiting to be adopted?
I really think that there's not enough information out there.
A lot of parents that screw up.
That too. There's a lot of confidentiality in the foster system. You know, you want to protect these children's identities. You want to protect, if you ever have foster children in your home, if you have social media, you are not supposed to show their faces. You know, it's confidentiality. And in that confidentiality comes sort of this hidden world that not a lot of people know about. If these kids were all able to have their photos out there and have videos of them, and there's so many great children, and there are a couple of organizations that are starting to do that. They usually do it with older kids who can consent, though. So they don't really take a 4-year-old and make videos and put them out there just because it's, you know, a confidentiality issue. So I think that's a conflict that they're always trying to balance, you know, getting the word out versus any kind of possible exploiting the situation. So it's tricky. It's a delicate thing to manage.
Yeah, especially when, you know, most of the stuff you hear about the foster care system is from people who were in foster care. So it's a word of mouth thing. And you usually don't hear good things about it. And so I'm sure that helps, you know, deter people away.
Tell us about the challenges that teenagers who are in the system face as they turn 18.
There is a real challenge for children who are, they call it aging out of the foster system. So they are in foster care at the time that they're turning 18 or graduating from high school. And many times the stories are that the child in foster care will age out and just be kicked out of their foster home. There's obviously a monthly subsidy that comes when you are caring for a child, and that of course ends when they graduate from high school or when they turn 18. And a lot of people just say, sorry, you're out of luck, you're out of here, which I can't imagine in any way. But that, I think, is an unfortunate piece of it that people also don't realize. Now, there are, in the last few years, even more so, and in California, I've seen extended foster care now, where if the children are going to a trade school or enrolled in college, there is extended benefits for them, or even benefits and programs to help them get out and live on their own and things like that, which I think is wonderful that more and more programs like that are coming up. But it's a sad reality that many children across the country will go through their foster years, turn 18, and then essentially be homeless overnight.
What would you say to someone who is considering fostering or adopting?
I think the main advice that I usually give people is to understand trauma, understand childhood trauma, because once you understand it, once you really sort of almost anticipate the things that these children are going to go through as they process their grief or trauma and all of the things they've had to sometimes suffer with, I think it's much easier to deal with in your home and as a parent, because you're not taking it personally. You're not saying, oh, this child just doesn't like me, that's why they're acting this way. You know, you understand it. You understand trauma. You understand what they're wrestling with. And so the biggest advice I give anyone, even who wants to start fostering, is there's a lot of great books that I always recommend. You know, read about trauma and read about PTSD and read about how children, when they're emotionally stunted because of not being nurtured properly, you know, you can have a 10-year-old who emotionally is about at the level of a 6 or 7-year-old, and it's not because there's anything wrong with them, it's just because that piece of them hasn't had an opportunity to grow. And so you need to provide an opportunity for that emotional piece of them to grow as well. And it lags behind for a little while. But I think understanding those things makes all the difference in the world.
Addie and Ruby, what would you say to a child who is waiting to be adopted right now?
You are not unlovable. I would say that you are not unlovable. I know there's a lot of things that happen in your life that can make you feel that way. I certainly felt that way. I did not feel loved at all by my biological parents. I felt like I was detested by them, in fact, and I didn't feel very loved with my siblings because obviously there was a lot going on and it was just a stressful time for all of us. But you're not unlovable. It's unfortunate, you know, what you're going through, but there are genuinely good people out there. Like, I got adopted by probably some of the best parents in the world. There are people out there who will love you for you, all your faults, all your imperfections, all your struggles, everything.
Mm-hmm. I would say to like a child or a teen, put yourself first and just be who you are. Don't change yourself to try to be what others want. And don't put your problems and what you need to deal with off to the side to put others' needs before yours. Focus on what you're in foster care for and what happened, and deal with that, go through with that, and find someone who will help you with that.
Help you break the cycle.
That's another good one that she started bringing up. Also, allow yourself to feel. Like she said, don't push away your problems. I did that when I first moved in with Pam and Gary, and that came back to bite me in a lot of aspects, such as like love, and then eventually academics, and then some friendships, and now social stuff in general. Allow yourself to feel everything you're feeling in that moment. It is okay to be hurt. It is okay to be mad, sad, everything. Just let yourself feel those emotions, because once you can feel them, then you can work through them, and that'll help you and everybody that wants to work with you.
Also, to remember your worth and don't listen to other people, because I know I remember how much negativity I got while being in foster care and how many times I was told that I wasn't gonna be loved the way that others were, that there was something wrong with me because I was in foster care. Like, kids need to remember that they're not different because they're in foster care. They're not unlovable. They're not cursed. They're not going to be alone forever. Like, you will find someone. You will find your forever family, just like we did. It takes time, and you have to be patient. But you have to remind yourself to not forget what you're worth, because it's very easy to do that.
I've been speaking with Pam Willis, adoptive mother of the Second Chance 7 and the oldest two siblings of the Second Chance 7, Addie and Ruby. Any last thoughts for us?
I would just say to explore options. You know, if this is something that interests you, or you know, you just want to know more about, there are lots of places to learn about it, and just check it out, and you might be surprised at what you find.
Thank you so much for talking with us today and sharing this amazing, beautiful, inspirational story.
Of course.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation Trusted Dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection. Because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.